Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I am your host, Misha Globerman. As you know, Trampoline Hall is a lecture series that takes place in a bar. It's usually in Toronto, but sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot speak on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This, of course, is a Trampoline Hall podcast. And the way that works is that in each episode, we go back through the Trampoline archives and we pick lectures to podcast to use. Some of them are old, some of them are new, but all of them are great. The way we do it is we do it in short mini seasons of 6 episodes, one a week. This is the start of the current season. So this is the very first episode. There will be 5 more of them. That makes 6. They are all chosen by Kate Bars, who went through the archives and chose excellent episodes for you to enjoy. By the way, if you are in Toronto and you like what you hear on the podcast, you should come see the show. Go to our website, join the mailing list, and we'll tell you when the next one is. But for now, let's go to this episode's lecture. It probably contains mature language, who's to say, but let's say it does. The topic is empaths, RuPaul's Drag Race, and emotional porn, and the lecturer is Samantha Viorel.
The wonderful thing is I can't see any of you right now. It's good. But I might trip on... Can I move this? It's dangerous. All right. I'm an empath. This is something I've known on an emotional level for a long time, but something I've only recently started investigating from a scientific or rational level, what that means. As a bit of a background, it's really hard to stay close to it, that's why. Okay. As a bit of a background, empaths, and everyone really, we exist on a spectrum of how we connect with others. And for empaths, on one end of the spectrum are highly sensitive people who can experience the emotions and even physical sensations of others indiscernibly from themselves. Narcissists, on the other end of the spectrum, are people who completely lack empathy, are prone to manipulate, and often have distorted or grandiose self-image. The thing in common between narcissists and empaths is their blurry boundaries of the self. For me, I'm an emotional empath, and that has manifested in my life in pretty common ways for empaths. So I get overwhelmed in crowds, I experience anxiety, like right now, and I have bad dreams. But the earliest manifestation of being an empath that I can recall is being a child and going into the grocery store with my mom. And we'd be cashing out, and all of a sudden, I would find myself really deep in story about this cashier. I would start thinking about their life. I'd be thinking about their family, if they have friends. And I just remember experiencing a lot of feelings of sadness. And it's not that there's anything inherently sad in cashiers. I experience this with most people, like on the bus or whatever. I think I'm very sensitive to loneliness specifically. But the point is I thought I had this really weird and intense imagination. And what I've since realized, what I've since learned, is that as an empath, I actually am picking up on the emotions and thoughts and stories of people and emotionally responding with that. One of the other ways that being an empath has manifested in my life is I'm very sensitive to the types of media and literature that I consume. So I watch the same movies over and over again. I read the same books over and over again. And I do this as a way to manage my emotional responses and outputs. And it's really hard for me to watch something I've never seen before. And especially if it's something I know is going to be emotional or like anti-cathartic. So I can't fuck with like Coen Brothers or anything like that. Which brings me to the topic of my talk, and that is that I'm obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. To start, I didn't realize that RuPaul's Drag Race was reality TV. I understood that it was a competition show about drag queens. I understood that it was real people, but I guess because they're performers, my brain didn't make the connection between this show and reality TV. Part of this also is because I have a very specific conception of what reality TV is, because I never really watched it and or like could watch it. And I guess it's like, I remember Survivor and when that whole reality TV competition show thing started. And it seemed like it was just a bunch of people who were put in competition, and whether it was through human nature, human nurture, they would form alliances for survival or whatever. And a few years later, I watched this other reality show. It was called I Love Money, in case anyone was wondering. And something had changed in the genre where it had become almost completely self-aware. These people understood how to play the game to manipulate the outcomes. And they also understood that if they produced themselves in a certain way, it could result in continued fame. And it's really interesting to me, this shift in reality TV where it became almost sentient. The thing with RuPaul's Drag Race, though, is that I watched it out of order, so I didn't realize until I was a few seasons in about how this had happened in this show. RuPaul's Drag Race is a whole cultural phenomenon and can be viewed in so many ways as an entity and as this really unique thing that has happened. What I want to focus on is how it's been on TV for 10 years, and what made a successful contestant on season one in 2008 is not what makes a successful contestant on season 10 in 2018. Drag Race at its inception was a hybrid of club drag, pageantry, and ball culture, all of which are subcultures of gay culture, with gay culture arguably also being a subculture. Without going into the history of what drag is, or what it isn't, drag culture and gay culture, as it pertains to fashion, music, and the arts, historically were the tastemakers. These folks were our tastemakers. Subcultures are where the mainstream borrows or co-ops what eventually becomes the mainstream. And as the result, you have this like perpetual sprouting of subcultures, and whether that's even possible in a globalized or internet era is another thing. But what is interesting about Drag Race seasons 1, 2, and 3 is that what made a successful contestant was the things that are true of drag, pageantry, and ball as themselves as subcultures. Things like resourcefulness, creativity, personality, ingenuity, and in the earlier seasons, you had a lot of queens who were the winners who were people of color. Fast forward to season 10 and the most contemporary seasons, this has been reversed. What makes a successful queen on RuPaul's Drag Race on season 10 is how well you represent the mainstream, and it is the mainstream that is informing the subculture. That partnered with reputation economy, the power of Instagram, and our obsession with the viral, drag queens are so self-produced that the winning of the show is rooted in how catchy your catchphrase is, how much money you have, how much pop culture reference you know, and how arts educated you are. There is also this added layer of how Drag Race fans are super obsessed and loyal, but also very toxic and delusional. If you're well-liked, you can have a tremendous career. If you aren't, you can be the victim of the darkest side of the internet and even delusional vitriol. In addition to being reality TV, RuPaul's Drag Race is also emotional porn. The way the show is produced and directed, even from the earliest seasons, there was this self-awareness about how to captivate an audience and how to get someone watching to relate or connect with the contestants. The RuPaul's Drag Race universe, for anyone who hasn't watched it, I assume everyone here has watched it, is made up of Drag Race and Untucked. Untucked is the behind-the-scenes show after the queens have received their critiques on the main stage and essentially in between competing and when we find out who's the tops and the bottoms for the week. In earlier seasons of Untucked, there would be conversation starters to provoke conflict between the queens. And then, and even now, the queens are shown video messages from estranged or ill family members in what feels like to be to prompt emotional breakdowns. You have people who are in high-stakes captivity. They've just been read to filth. They've been wearing heels for hours. And then it's like, here's a video of your dying mom who never accepted you. In Drag Race, during B-roll, or when the queens are getting into drag, contestants are prompted to ask each other about provocative subjects. This is very season-specific. In the earlier seasons, they would talk about things like dead parents or things relevant in the gay community at that time, like HIV crisis. More contemporarily, things like trans issues, anti-gay violence, like what happened at Pulse nightclub. And in this most recent season, there were many conversations about race. In earlier seasons, it appeared more organic. Like an example would be if the challenge was a wedding dress challenge, they might talk about gay marriage that week. And this would at least seem a bit authentic. But by season 10, you have these like rapid fire conversations and queens are just trying to get their story in or their two cents in. And when a single thing a queen says can be taken and go so viral online that they receive death threats, it's really hard to imagine people having authentic conversations. That said, the amazing byproducts of these contrived conversations is that, especially in this most recent season, it created a platform for Black queens and other queens of color to talk about things like being Black and gay, or growing up religious and gay, and ultimately just having these really important intersectional conversations on television. We are privy to these people's struggles and their successes, and I've personally been really empowered and inspired by specific queens. However, queens have come out post-Drag Race to talk about how uncomfortable they were, being kind of coaxed into discussing these personal issues, things like their assaults. And a lot of times, a queen's post-Drag Race success is rooted in her tact in participating in this emotional pornography. To be clear, I've watched every episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, and Untucked, and multiple times. I will, however, skip episodes I know are heavy in emotional porn because, for one, it detracts from what I love about the show and reveals the depths of its narcissism. And two, I just get really emotionally affected. Herein lies my conflict of being an empath and being obsessed with RuPaul's Drag Race. The current reality of this reality TV show impacts my ability to enjoy it. The same way I wonder if reality TV is really sentient, I wonder if RuPaul's Drag Race has reached singularity. What's going to happen with season 11? What's going to happen with All Stars 4? I might just end up rewatching All Stars season 2 for the rest of my life because I love it and I love how it makes me feel. Thanks.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A. Yeah, you stay here and they're going to ask you questions. I hope. Well,
hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are there any questions? Oh, yes, all the way in the back of the room, yes.
Sorry, could you shout out just a little more? So specifically about how virality, specifically around the lip syncs, has affected the show?
And then what was the other part? Just like Instagram, like gifts
and stuff. So Instagram, how do you think that's affected the show a lot?
Oh, completely. Like the GIF ability and all of that. Like, because in a viral culture, it's all about like shareable content, right? And when you look at someone like, or if you look at, that comes into production value and stuff too, and it becomes a bit of like a cycle, because it's like season one, you don't have a lot of GIFs or shareable content because the lighting was really bad and they had like Vaseline on the camera and like all kinds of shit like that. And then, so there's no money to go into it. And all, and then now the production value is so high that any moment can be captured. And a lot of times, like just on your phone, I invite you to look at where you can like look up GIF, like look up Alyssa Edwards. And like, there's like a million GIFs of this drag queen. Is that your question? I mean, the viral nature of it, it's like we love Instagrammable moments. So I think that contributes to it.
And do you feel that affects like the performances on the show? Because people are trying to create those Instagrammable moments and trying to create things that turn to GIFs. And I guess both the performers and the producers, is that part of it? Or
totally. And I think that, and like I said, when I first started watching it, I was much like other folks where I saw it because it had came out on Netflix. I had friends who were into it. I hadn't really dipped in much. And so I watched like fairly recent seasons, and then I went back and watched all of the other seasons, and so you definitely see a shift in the way that the queens present themselves and how they like produce themselves to be more viral and more shareable. Like this most recent season, there was a queen, Miss Vanjie, and she was on the show for one episode and is arguably one of the most successful RuPaul's Drag Queen queens ever, because as she left, she did this very iconic thing where she walked backwards on the stage and was like, Miss Vanjie, just like saying her own name. And it just became the most like shareable and like viral content, to the point, I mean, she's everywhere. And so, yeah.
Do you feel, all right, okay, I can ask her. I've got a bunch of questions. Well, here, is anything else? Do you have anyone? Yes, you, ma'am, yeah.
As someone who also feels that watching, right,
So if you're someone who doesn't like reality TV, what drew you to this?
Well, there was that part about not realizing that it was reality TV. But so I have a background in like sewing and costuming, and so part of it for me at first was that challenge aspect, that you would have folks given the same resources on site and they're like, okay, do this thing with it. And I would love to see what they would create. And I also just think drag queens are some of the most important people in our society, and they just teach so much about fearlessness and subversion of gender. And so it really appealed to me that it was, once it started getting kind of messy around playing with their authenticity and their ability to be who they were as people, that it got a little weird. Just
right. So what you turned was the drag queens.
Yeah, I loved drag queens.
Very
yeah.
Cool. All right, does that answer your question? Of course it does. Yeah, anything else? Anything else you would like to know? Any other questions? Yeah, over there. Great, yes, thank you for, yeah.
As an empath, do you believe a sociopath can feel compassion?
Do you feel a sociopath can feel compassion?
Conversion.
Can feel what?
Conversion.
Conversion?
Conversion.
What's the word? You all know it except me.
Compersion.
The opposite of Schadenfreude? I've never heard this word before. The opposite of Schadenfreude is compersion, and you guys all know this word except me. All right. So, and the question is whether, and the question for you as an empath is whether a sociopath can feel that. Did I get that right, at least?
I'm not qualified to answer that question.
But we worked so hard on getting it to you.
You heard this speech. How many words did I say aren't even real words? Like, I don't know how to
right,
answer.
So you're
that.
An empath, but you don't know, you're not an expert on sociopaths. That's even farther from your non-expertise.
Yeah, I think it's like if you look at that spectrum, you have like, yeah, you have empaths and narcissists, and then sociopaths are probably that next layer. I mean, narcissism is also like a recognized personality disorder alongside sociopathy, but I couldn't speak to that.
As an empath, do you, just to maybe get a glee, to give this guy some satisfaction, as an empath, like, do you, when you encounter people who you perceive to be narcissistic or sociopathic, like, how does that feel to you? Like, do you have an insight into their experience of being so non-empathic?
No, I think, like, well, they say that empaths are attracted to narcissists, which is weird because my love partner's here right now.
Is that person?
He's not a narcissist. Is he
really a narcissist? You can say
no,
it.
No. He's just right. A Leo. He's just a Leo. Right. But when I don't know, you know, the thing with being an empath is like, I won't necessarily be able to identify that, like, it's like, oh, that person's a narcissist. Or it's like it's more of like a feeling, like I might start to have anxiety and I'll be like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, why do I have anxiety right now? And it is like not rooted in anything in me. It's like I'm experiencing it from somebody else.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right, cool. Yes, a hand up over there. Thank you. Do you think how do contestants who are more empathic on RuPaul's Drag Race do on the show versus those who are less so?
It really depends. This most recent season, there was a queen named Asia O'Hara who I felt was like really an empath, and she ultimately would be at a disadvantage in challenges because she'd be at other people's workstation, like helping them, making sure they were doing okay, and it would like take away from her own work and well-being. And I think in that scenario where the more narcissistic you are, the more you thrive, actually. And trying to replicate that behavior was like part of what I felt was her downfall during the finale. So I think that empaths don't do as well. That said, when they leave the show, if they were considered like most congenial, or if they're like a fan favorite, if people love them, then that does do well for them in their post-Drag Race career.
Do you feel that your personal experience as an empath is more like the people on the show who suffer from being an empath, or the post-show Drag Races in that you thrive for being an empath? Just for you in the world?
I'm constantly suffering, yeah. like in this moment. No, yeah, I faced challenges with it, and like it can be a gift, but it's like anything where you have to learn to harness it and to like work within a system that doesn't necessarily value those things. So it's kind of about like having self-awareness with it and recognizing boundaries and like developing that kind of thing.
And what are the dangers of like being taken advantage of or looking too much after other people's interests, like you were describing in the show, or are there other things other than that?
Yeah, I think it has to do with being getting burnt out more than anything. But to answer your question more fully, I think of it as an advantage. I think I thrive because of it, because it helps me stay connected to why I do the work I do or why I nurture the relationships I nurture, and those are the things that I value. So. Right. In terms of the things that I value, I feel like I get a lot from it.
Okay, cool, great. Anything else? And that's all the way in the back of the room. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I see. Have you ever like investigated the accuracy of your empathic? So like if you encounter someone, like, so you go around the world and you're like, oh, that person seems lonely, that person seems happy, that person seems afraid. Like, have you investigated whether those insights are accurate? Ask the skeptic in the back of the room, the empiricist.
The answer is yes, and I will not elaborate. No, I mean, when I'm being, a recent example I had was I was in Designer Fabrics. I don't know if any of you know it. It was on Queen Street, and they were open for like 60 years, and the people in there are like super, super hardworking, like devoted fabricarians, and I was getting all of my like discount fabrics, and the man who was helping me, he was cutting up my fabric, and he was treating it like they weren't about to shut down, you know, like he was in it 100%. But then as he's cutting my fabric, which should be a really exciting time for me, I started to experience like kind of fear, like sadness, and I was like, oh, I wonder if this man is like experiencing that because his job is ending, and this is like a really competitive employment market for people who are like above middle age, and like maybe he's been doing this for 30 years. Like, this is what I mean. Like, I'm going in. I'm like, what about his family? Yeah. Do you think he has retirement? Like, and I didn't ask him. You know, I didn't ask him how he's feeling. But certainly when I'm with people, if I feel close enough to them, if I ask them, I'm like, is something going on? They'll be like, no. I'm like, what's going on? They're like, okay. And so I think I do have quite a bit of accuracy with it.
Do you ask people in those kinds of situations? Like, I know you didn't in that situation, but when you talk about, like, the cashier or the guy at the fabric store, are there moments when you do that in those situations? Do you ask, or do you?
Not like, to that, like, investigative level, but right. I will ask people. I try to make a conscious effort to, like, look people in the eye and be like, how are you doing today? And I was like, is it okay? And to at least ask them, because maybe no one has asked them that day. So,
okay. All right. Yeah. Okay, cool. Any other questions? Anything else they would like to know? Yes, over there. I see a hand waving. It's kind of dark out there. Yeah, help me.
So is empathy in decline or is it growing?
Is empathy in decline or is it a growth state?
I don't even think I could say. Like, I am in my own bubble, right? Like, I have my own social media bubble and everything, and, like, the type of work I do is, like, rooted in community-based work, so everybody's always sharing about that stuff, you know? It seems like empathy is growing. And then you go out into the real world and we have an election like we just had, and it's like, I don't know, man. Like, so I would like to think that it's growing, but I don't know.
When you watch the show, so you watch the show, you describe this sort of, it was funny for me, I'm trying to put the story together, because you describe this sort of disappointment, I guess, in the later episodes of the show. And so I assumed that you'd watch them in order. Like, I pictured, like, you watching the early ones and then it getting, going on and on, you getting, like, more and more sort of discouraged. But that's not the order you watched them in, is that right?
No, I think I did 8, then I did 6, 5, 4, 7, 9, All Stars 1. All Stars 2. All Stars 2 really is the best. Like, really, if you've never, come on. Like, really, it's just a good time. And one of the reasons why All Stars 2 is so good is because everyone who's there is having fun. Everybody there is, like, a drag queen amongst drag queens. They are, like, really living their best lives on that season. And it's just such a nice time. So I really... but when it was like after I started watching the earlier seasons, I realized, like, how produced the later seasons are. Because I never took an issue with, like, any of, like, product placement or any of that stuff. Like, I don't care. But then you see how the queens talk to each other and how you can see them not having, like, authentic responses. And so that's where some of the disillusionment started to happen.
So the stuff that you saw originally seemed sort of more inauthentic in retrospect after you saw the earlier stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm curious, like, what that was like emotionally for you. Because it seems like the show mattered to you a lot.
It does.
So was that disappointing, or was it frustrating, or was it, like, it's like clearly there's a, like, it's not a casual interest, right?
Yeah, no, it's not a casual interest, no. like, really, live and breathe this. It's a little silly. But, yeah, it's tough because of, like I said, like, I worry about what season, because new content is always fun. It's the one way where I can get, like, excited, and I have, like, a Drag Race fantasy league, and, like, we're like, okay, like, who's gonna do whatever.
Whoa.
And so it's hard to know that, like, moving forward, the queens are gonna get less and less authentic, and I don't blame them. Like I said, like, the way that the internet treats people, like, they're not even people. Like, the objectification of it is part of what makes it so hard.
Right.
It's not even necessarily the show isn't still enjoyable. It's, like, seeing how people treat other people. And I try not to be a purist. Like, some people can be like, the later seasons.
Yeah,
but
like with anything. Yeah. Like, with that sort of, I thought, was like, oh, this thing used to be really good, and then it got worse. It's like, you hear that story a lot, and because things do get worse. But it's funny to hear from someone who didn't encounter the good part early, you know?
Yeah. And I was really hesitant to watch season one because it's, like, the lost season, and it doesn't, like, Rue hasn't figured out her sayings yet, so it's, like, really uncomfortable. But actually, I have so much love for that season because they will just, like, read each other down. They're not worried that the internet's going to come after them or they'll get death threats or whatever. And so there's an honesty and something I really love about it.
And then it becomes more something that you call, that you described as emotional porn.
Mm-hmm,
and I'm curious,
mm-hmm.
can you, like, tell me what that, like, what do you mean by that phrase?
So the emotional porn is where it's, like, content that's intended to just, like, you know, when you're talking about the thing about, like, pulling the information into you? It's like the... emotional porn is meant to tug at your stuff,
right.
You know, it's and to have, like, a bit of, like, a mental wank about it or, like, an emotional wank about it. And some people like that. Like, some people want it. Like, they'll watch, you know, The Notebook and be like, yeah, like, going in, which is a really problematic movie. But, like, But the forcing you to feel stuff.
Right.
Some people really love that and they need that because they move through their rest of their lives like not feeling everything all the time. Whereas like I feel everything all the time, so I'm like I want the, that's the last thing I want.
And do you think it like affects you extra more, or does it just like perceive you as fake and you just like passes through you, or a bit of both, or like as someone who's an empath, like?
Yeah, it depends on what it is. Certain things will like do the thing, and I'm like, like I didn't want like you know the movie like Pursuit of Happiness. Just the title of it, I was like, nope. Like,
like that the title was enough. You were
and
like
the cover, and I'm like, the family. Like, I just don't want to do it.
You, that was too much. Just the cover and the title was too emotional for you.
Yeah, I can't. It's too much. But like with the emotional porn on Drag Race, I think it's like anything. You hit like your, I hit a wall, and I'm like, okay, now I'm like, I've shut down, and I can't feel it, and I might just be annoyed.
That's
by
what I wondered
it
about. I wondered if, like, as an empath, like it wouldn't work on you. Like, it would work less on you because you're just like, well, there's no actual real feelings happening here because it's just like pretend or whatever.
I think so. When it's real, I can tell.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Any other questions? Anything else? Oh yes, over there. Yeah, over there. Yes, yes.
Do you find that people that you don't know that well are drawn to you for emotional support?
Do you think people you don't know well are drawn to you for emotional support?
Yeah.
Are you having that feeling with her now? Are you like, do you want to tell her? Do you have a problem you want to tell her about?
Talk to me about it. Yeah, definitely. They do.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's wonderful. Yeah, that's good. That's a good thing. I want that. And like I said earlier about like learning to establish boundaries for myself, that's the most important thing, is that I know what I have capacity for and then I can hold that space or whatever.
So you don't feel like that's something where you don't feel taken advantage of or whatever? You feel like you're kind of in control of that?
No, I think I never feel taken advantage of by people I don't know. I definitely have that experience with people I do know.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think
people
so.
People you know are the worst.
Definitely, and none of them are here.
Wait, none of them. All right. Anything, I keep thinking about your partners here now doesn't fall in the category of people you know, and I'm like, oh.
Do you ever really
kind of
know your partner?
No, it's a good point. All right. Yes, yes. Oh, okay, up there. Oh, you're waving so hard. Yes. Yeah. What are some of your as someone who's into the costumes? What are some of your favorite costumes on Drag Race?
Are you a big Drag Race fan?
Are you a big Drag Race fan?
You've okay.
never seen the show. Oh, you're in for a treat.
Yeah.
Just hearing about the costumes.
It's like,
I mean,
so many fond moments. I think. Okay, so one of the things I will say about the most recent seasons is that the costuming has gotten extremely elaborate, and that kind of speaks to that point about. You need to have a lot of money going into it to be successful versus in the first season where people literally wore like garbage and it was excellent, you know, it's totally fine. But I think there maybe isn't a favorite costume that comes to mind, but my favorite costumes are the ones where they're all kind of like in the workroom and given the stuff and they've got to create something from what they found in a dumpster or whatever. But I tend to like costumes that have a lot of like, that incorporate stuff into their hair. Like there was this one costume that a drag queen named Lanesha Sparks made out of wallpaper. And there's like a whole big fan on the one side and she had like spray painted all of it and it was brocade. And then she had a giant like pump in her hair, which was like this big and it like dangled down. And it was just, I don't know, it was stunning, yeah.
Does that answer your question? Do you have a good mental image of that? All right. Should she watch the show?
You should watch. If you like costumes, then yeah, you should watch the show.
Or if you like anything, you should watch the show. Yes, back there, yeah.
Do you think that the show needs to have more responsibility for what's happening to these contestants?
Should
the shows have more responsibility for what's happening to these contestants?
Should the shows have more responsibility to what happens to the contestants?
Yeah, like,
so in terms of like stuff that happens to them on social media, that should the shows take more responsibility for that?
I wonder how, you know, like in a way, it's like while they're on the show, they'll say stuff like, we don't condone this or like whatever. But I definitely think that they could not produce the show in the way that they do sometimes that create that kind of conflict where people take from it and then are, like I said, like delusionally like vitriolic with, is vitriolic a word? Is
totally
that one real?
A word. Okay. Oh my God.
with the queens, and it becomes like the thing I said about reputation economy. It becomes like a community where they start to police themselves, and I think it comes from, as a community of like Drag Race fans, that we kind of have that responsibility to take care of each other with it. It's something to think about, though. I don't know how the show could take it more responsibility other than to produce it, not to make people seem fucked. Yeah.
That's something. I have a question. At the beginning, you talked about like things that made you uncomfortable as an empath, and one of them I think that you talked about was like being in a situation like this. Mm-hmm. So how's this been?
What has this been like
for you? Like as an empath, what's this been like?
Well, I look forward to going home and obsessing over every single thing that is said for the next 6 years. But, or more. I don't know. I definitely don't have a sense of ease and comfort.
Like, right. That's just like a normal human thing. Like, I'm comfortable up here, but that's because I'm kind of messed up.
Right.
But, like, normal people come up here and it's nervous. That's like a... Yeah. Is there anything that you feel is like a... I don't know. Like, do you feel that there's... I think, I don't know, like the thing that like specifically you as an empath might feel in this, do you feel like a response from the room, or do you feel like, I guess I'm not sure I know what I'm asking.
Like how sensitive am I to like everybody's energy?
What it is that makes this experience unique for you as an empath, I guess, or unusual for you as an empath?
So chances are when I go home, I will actually be quite manic because I've like absorbed a lot of energy from other people.
Right.
So it might take a while to like burn down some of that energy, but... one of the things about being an empath is that when you experience the emotions, or even like I said, physical sensations, some people have it with animals or with earth, like it's wild, but is that it's indistinguishable from my own. So it's like right now I feel anxiety, but it's like, is that my anxiety because I'm nervous, or is it because there's like a bunch of like different energies, like do you all hate me, like I have no idea.
Right. Oh, so it actually is confusing, like that many people or whatever. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you just go home and obsess.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the whole time other people are talking tonight too.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoy that. We'll let you, ladies and gentlemen, please thank Samantha Villarreal.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Angela Shackle and Braden Labonte. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, you might also want to leave a rating and review on iTunes. It really helps us out a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.